Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
I give you power.
Say what?
I want to make sure I give you power.
Oh. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
And I'm Chuck.
And a little bleed over from our midweek show, we have our third Los Hermanos Pendejos brother from Locker Room. And for those of you who don't listen to Locker Room, he has also been on War Stories, my homie and brother Matt.
Hey guys.
Matthew. For the War Stories only listeners that just, because okay, I'm sure there are people out there that just skip the Locker Room episodes because they don't go in for kind of shenanigans.
But you're missing out though.
You are missing out, especially, you know, some of these jokes from last week. It was pretty good.
Dude.
Anyway.
No.
Chuck and I had something we were discussing, and we thought we've got to get to these emails.
Let's do the emails first and then get to the other shit.
Right. But we brought up Matt on because I think we were going to talk about some discussions that Chuck and I were having, both as, you know, like, you're a cop in your professional life, but in your personal life, some shady ass family shit goes on, and how do you deal with it? And then talking about, or
is it even right? Like,
right.
Should it even be a conversation?
We'll get to that. Yeah. So we'll get to that, but we wanted to, so we don't have a typical story today. We're going to kind of answer some emails and play a little catch up on a topic that's been something that's on Chuck and our minds minds lately. So the first one I have is from Jody. He says, hey guys, first off, I wanted to say I absolutely love your podcast. Several episodes have brought me to tears, either from laughing or legit issues I've come across in the fire service. With that being said, I'd like to get your opinions on the animosity between professional and volunteers, full times and reserves, etc. Reason I'm bringing this up is I've been a volunteer firefighter in a small rural county in Kansas for over 13 years. And work full time as a fleet mechanic for the city next county over, and have experienced some upturned noses and degrading comments from some of the career fire guys that come into the shop. About 85 to 90% of the guys are cool and chat with me about calls, ran, and even some want to come out to my county during burn season and train on wildland. But there are those that think of me and volunteers as wannabes. I appreciate you guys taking the time to read this. And if you're able to give advice or voice your opinions, if great, if not, no big deal. I always look forward towards the notification of an episode being dropped. Hope and pray for a day when the shield is no longer needed, Jody. So I like that email. I appreciate it. And I thought we would take some time to address it.
Right. Jody there, if you're ever in the military, yeah, you would know why this name is funny. Stay away from my woman. I can speak from a police perspective. When it comes to our reserves, when they come in, they don't have the same training as us. They kind of have similar, and the highest levels can carry a gun, wear the same uniform, badge, whatever, and then go out in the field. But they don't deal with the public as often. Sometimes they're not as safe. And so we kind of like upturn our nose to him, like, this guy's kind of like, I don't know, he shouldn't be in the field. They don't have enough training for this shit, and they go out by themselves. They're just going to get someone hurt or themselves hurt. Now, with what I know about the fire, when you're volunteers, is that you guys have the same training and some stations are completely volunteer. And in my opinion, if you're doing the job as the same as an active firefighter and you have the same training, same experience, but you're doing this for, you're volunteering to do it and you have another day job, that's fucking awesome. We've had some guys on this show and they have a wealth of knowledge. They're smart as shit. I don't have a problem with it. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. I can understand. I should say, I guess I understand why it happens. I don't think it's right. Now, I'll tell you, I worked at a department where we had reserve officers when I first got there. And they were the older kind of reserve officers. You know, they were guys that had regular jobs. I think one was a probation officer for the California, or a correction officer for California Youth Authority. So he was like a prison guard for, you know, anything under 18. But he liked to keep up his peace officer status. So he rode, you know, two shifts a month and was a reserve copper with us. But, you know, it was just another guy in the car who could take reports and help you arrest bad guys. He was fully trained and, you know, he got paid for the time he was there. He just was like, kind of like a part-time cop, you know? But then there are guys who become reserve officers that are wannabes, and yep, they do tend to, I guess they try to become reserve officers as a stepping stone, but then everybody sees that they're never going to make it as a full-time police officer. So they just kind of stay a reserve their entire life. So I understand that. It's not to say they should be treated any differently or any worse. It's just, I understand it. The fire guys, we had volunteer firefighters, and we had those guys were all the young guys that were trying to get on as full-time firefighters. That's how you started out, is becoming a volunteer firefighter, because those jobs were so sought after and rarely did they ever have an opening. So those guys, you know, I didn't see very much negative treatment for the volunteer guys until those volunteer guys acted like cocky pricks who knew their shit and couldn't, you know, they'd been to the academy, they're hot shot, they're, you know, they knew their stuff. And the full-time firefighters were like, hey, son, you need to take it down a notch or two. You don't have the stripes on your sleeve to talk this much shit. So I think that, you know, kind of an attitude leaks into how full-time guys treat volunteer guys. But I know even Matt in the military, reservists, or there's a level of kind of elitism between full-time guys and reservist guys, is there not?
Right. Yeah, there is. And even within full-time guys, there's a level of, you know, oh, you're a pogue, or, you know, you got this job, or you're admin. And my whole take on that is, I think it's admirable for anybody to step up into those shoes on a volunteer basis, because obviously there's a need for it or the program wouldn't exist. And if you're going to have any animosity towards anyone, I think somebody who is even attempting to, you know, fill your shoes on a part-time basis is admirable in and of itself, because that's another person stepping up to do that job. To, you know, it's an inherently dangerous job, whether you're a reserve, you know, a person in the National Guard or reserve Army, or, you know, you can get called upon, or you're a reserve firefighter, you're, you know, still putting yourself in danger and whatnot. And, But I see the point of, you know, there's a couple, you know, rotten apples in the bunch, and they, you know, spew their, you know,
right,
you know, start right, jack-jawing a little bit and bumping their gums too much. And that's, you know, to be expected with some. But I think all in all, and this is just my, you know, dumb veteran civilian outtake on your guys' world, you know, the first responder world. But I think it's, you know, hey, good on you for, you know, being a reservist and still holding down a full-time job doing something else. And then this is something when you could be not working, you're stepping up to, you know, to volunteer your services to your community. I think it's admirable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And remember this, like Matt always talks about, you know, people that didn't deploy still did more than anybody who didn't sign up to be a veteran.
Exactly. So, you know, exactly.
Well, it's the same thing with reserve and volunteer firefighters and police officers. You know, you already signed up, you're there, you're doing the job. Just take pride in that. And remember that just like there's always going to be wannabe turds that ruin the names and reputations of reserve or volunteer police and firefighters, there's also going to be salty, elitist prick firefighters and cops that it doesn't matter. Like, you could actually be a full-time cop, but if you don't measure up to what their standard of right. a cop should be or a firefighter should be, then you're a piece of shit. And it just goes to show that, like anything, you know, a piece of shit, it's a piece of shit. So I hope that answers your question, Jody. This next one's a little bit long, so and I've proofread it, but I'm going to try and get through it here. It says, hey, all, I don't know if this will be read on air or not, but I wanted to thank you guys for helping me through 2021. Well, first of all, it is being read on the air as we speak, and you're welcome, because you guys have helped us get us through 2021 as well.
Right.
2020 sucked for everybody, but I think 2021 came at me with a vengeance, Die Hard 3 style. Please give me a chance to explain. The year started off with my father-in-law, who is a great friend and mentor of mine, being diagnosed with stomach cancer.
Oof.
Yeah. Shortly after they removed the 15-pound mass, not a typo, he spent weeks in recovery. A couple of weeks after he was healed up, my wife and I had a miscarriage of our second child. It took us a while to emotionally recover from that. But when we finally reached a better mindset, my father-in-law learned that he had to have his kidney removed because of additional located cancer that surgery is still pending. This was all on top of the always fun growing PTSD being a cop. All of this occurred, and what broke me down more than anything else was all through this time, my grandfather was slowly deteriorating in physical and mental health. He's been a symbol of success for me more than anything else. His life was the life I aspired to have someday. He was put on hospice, helped us and him through the process incredibly, and on August 25th, 2021, he passed away. Yesterday and today, August 30th, we went through the visitation and funeral services. I mentioned my grandfather for two reasons. Regardless, if only one of you read about him or all of you do, I truly believe he lived an amazing and apparently kick-ass life. Two, apparently my grandfather was the embodiment of quiet professional. I shit you not, these were some of the statements made by me and others at his visitation. What do you mean Frank was a fighter pilot in the Navy? I thought he was a paperwork guy.
Jesus.
Some variation of that was said by me and all the other grandchildren. Looking at a picture at the visitation, where was this picture taken? Answered from my grandmother, oh, that was one of the vacations years ago. We spent a couple of weeks in the Middle East, and that picture was taken in Afghanistan.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck.
He was he high up at was he that high up at Morgan Stanley? Was he president of what nonprofit? He downed a handle of Johnny Walker a month. And the best convo I had so far, context, I'm a bourbon guy. I can't drink beer because I'm allergic. My mom, yeah, your grandpa never drank bourbon much, said it was too sweet and wasn't strong enough. Me.
Shit.
Wow, I think my grandpa just called me a bitch from the grave. I know I'm rambling, but I'll get to the point. My grandfather, Frank Lorimer, was the quiet type. He worked hard, took care of his family, and involved himself in the community without bragging or asking for recognition. Someday, some grandchildren of those you interviewed will be able to listen to your episodes and listen to their relative tell their tales. I envy them. It's something I wish I had done. I wish I had poked and prodded more to learn his history, but I think my grandfather was content with not being asked. That being said, thanks again for what you guys do. Anytime a Navy vet comes on, I get a special excitement, a way to glimpse into a life once lived by my grandfather. Your podcast helped me through a hard time and bring me relief when I'm riding in black and white through the night. Thanks again, Danny. And then he included an obituary. So I want to say, Frank Lorimer, this episode's for you, because you sound like a guy I would have wanted to drink with.
Absolutely. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, that's pretty crazy. I mean, that kind of happened to me a little bit when my grandfather died, because, you know, I had one grandfather that died young when I was about 17, and another one that died like way late. And he was the older of the two. He died when I was in my 30s. The one that died later, he had worked in the movie business. And so my dad had dug up an old resume of his for all the movies he'd worked on, he had it on display at this table. And I, you know, I'm working in the movie business at this point. I'm already retired from being a cop, and I'm looking at the list of movies and I'm going, wait, Grandpa worked on what now? I mean, like Jaws and The King and I, and, you know, all these crazy movies. And I kind of understand that, but I also understand losing, you know, your grandfather that was your mentor, because my grandfather, who fought in World War II, was one of the guys that I always, you know, wished I had gotten more stories from and shared things with. And I always wished he'd have gotten to see me graduate from the police academy. So I totally get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hell, Matt's got a grandfather. You guys don't know this, and I'm going to dime you off right now.
All right.
Matt's grandfather was kind of a big deal to me. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Matt's grandfather was in charge of Kit.
He was in charge of the entire shop at Universal, and was, I mean, the Hoff called him dad.
And but was Knight Rider, that's awesome.
Yeah, at our house all the time, you know.
Like, yeah. Whoa. You had the Hoff at your house?
I have a picture, I'll have to ask my mom for it. I have a picture of me holding his first daughter when I was like a teenager, because he came over to like a family party or something. Yeah, he was just, I guess his father, I don't know the story behind his father, but he basically adopted my grandfather and called him dad, and was just a regular fixture around family functions. Yeah.
Right. Kind of a weird flex, but
yeah. before the cheeseburger incident.
No, but like this is like Electric Light Jacket singing on the Berlin Wall, yeah, like prime Hasselhoff, man.
Yeah, there was another family member that had a wedding reception after party at his house. He's like, "Oh, just use my house." So
that's so dope.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
That's cool.
So okay. Troy. Hey there, Tom and Chuck. I've been following your podcast for a while now, and I got to say that between War Stories and Locker Room, you fellas have been a source of inspiration and entertainment. Your content takes the listener from gripping tales of courage, valor, and sometimes heart-wrenching trauma to hilarious coffee-spewing-at-my-nose anecdotes and comments. Keep up the great work, great content, and great guests. Pass this on to Marco and Matt as well. Well, Matt, it's officially passed on to you.
Okay,
pass it on. As a Canadian listener from British Columbia, I feel like I have to apologize for how our inept government has handled themselves in regards to the evacuation in Afghanistan. Our idiot leader ordered the Canadian forces home and basically left our allies to clean up a mess we helped make instead of standing with our American brothers and assisting. Well, didn't age well, because we did the same thing.
We see your
incompetence and raise you some dementia.
Yes. Tons. But hey, we have ice cream.
Yeah. I feel our Canadian government shoulders the responsibility, along with the Biden administration. Oh, good. At least the innocent. For the 13 brave U.S. soldiers who laid down their lives, not assisting and letting others do the work is shameful. My son serves in the Canadian Armed Forces along with numerous friends and relatives, and they are all shocked and embarrassed by our government's inaction. Apparently, Canada pulled out days ago, saying there's nothing more we can do, and left Canadian citizens and holders of valid authorization to fend for themselves. Absolute 100% bullshit. Yeah. Justin Trudeau is our national embarrassment. Well, Emperor Trudeau with
Sultan Trudeau.
Sultan Trudeau. Sultan.
What's the date of that email?
This was relatively recently. It was, I think it was before he got reelected. It didn't copy the date, but it was after the 13 soldiers have been killed. So it was within the last few weeks.
Such an idiot.
Yeah. He thinks throwing some hugs and kisses or words of "we strongly condemn" are somehow substitutes for military boots on the ground. Seriously, what the actual fuck, Justin? Yeah, what the actual fuck, Justin? If I may say that.
Right.
Please know this is not how real Canadians feel. I know, because technically I am a real Canadian.
Yes. Or
half a real Canadian.
Half a real Canadian.
Those of us true Canadians know we should be and would be standing with our American brothers until the last possible second. Fortunately, we have an election in a couple of weeks. There you go. So it was 2 weeks ago. Okay. Election in a couple of weeks. So we can vote this asshole out of office. Well,
that didn't age well. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Nope.
below is a link to an article about how Canada dropped the ball. So in true Canadian fashion, I'm saying sorry. He's right. He's got a point. In true Canadian fashion, oh, I'm so sorry for our country. I'm so
sorry.
Yeah, it's all sorry. Even though sorry doesn't cut it in this case, no amount of saying sorry can be of comfort to the families of those 13 souls who lost their lives serving their country. Rest easy, soldiers. You will be remembered. Tom, Chuck, Marco, and Matt, keep on doing what you're doing. When I listen to war stories, and especially the locker room, I feel like I'm sitting down with a bunch of buddies over a beer and shooting the shit. Being the same age, over 40 but not quite 50, and a solid Gen Xer, I can relate to all your topics. Drunk Star Wars, now that was some funny shit. If that was the goal of your podcast, you totally nailed it. Looking forward to the next one. With your shielder on it, Troy. So thank you, Troy.
That was, yeah, thanks, Troy.
I appreciate that.
If you could only see the behind the scenes making of that. Oh, fuck.
Oh, you can. Just go on YouTube.
Yeah, oh, but there's the other stuff.
Behind
there's,
the scenes.
Yeah. There's like the video that my wife took of me pulling a Hasselhoff on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
That. Yeah. To circle back to that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see. This is Ben. I'm not going to say his last name. It's Ben. Hey, guys. Sorry if there's a double email. I sent this via Facebook, but my phone wouldn't load, so I'm not sure if it went through. Discovered your show last spring when planning an interstate move. Over the past couple of months, I've listened to every episode and always look forward to new ones being posted. As an Army vet with an Afghan deployment, I've always felt like there was something missing ever since I got out. Hearing the stories, both good and bad, has been the inspiration to get the ball rolling on using the GI Bill to cover the local police academy here in Michigan. Fucking good on you, Ben.
Yeah. Awesome.
And God damn it, I mean, really, to become a cop right now, just
hell yeah.
You have my respect.
Props.
So thank you all very much for that. Wish you luck. Good luck. And if you need advice or you know, any sort of a helpful hint, or anything, you know, just email us and we'll be glad to answer it. Hopefully while you're in the academy, and send us a picture. We got to see you in your academy uniform.
Yeah.
So good luck. Anyway, with the Halloween season coming up, I was curious to see if any of you ever had an experience on the job that you just couldn't explain, be it supernatural, aliens, or just plain weird, but not tweaker weird. I'm not saying you need to believe in any of that. Just some odd situations you look back on and still can't quite describe. This had this idea for a while now. What do you think? Keep fighting the good fight. Take care. Cowabunga. So thank you, Ben. I actually like that idea. Matt isn't surprised, obviously. But many of the listeners might be surprised at some of my, beliefs and, responses to supernatural phenomenon. I will tell you straight up that my grandparents lived in a haunted house, and dude, there's nothing that's going to ever be said by anybody else to change my mind.
One of the most haunted houses in the city or area where I work, like, it's like a legit, like, on the radar of, like, if you search it in haunted houses, it's legit there and drive by. It's fucking weird at night.
Yeah. Well, dude. So with Chuck and Matt here, since we have a representative from War Stories and from Locker Room, is this a, I feel like this is a Marco conversation though. Like, I know he's talking about like things that have happened on the job that we couldn't explain, but I think
right.
Chuck and I could cover things that are on the job that we couldn't explain, but then you and Chuck could handle things in the military that maybe you couldn't explain, or, you know, things you'd been told or people you'd talked to. And then me, Marco, and you could handle like stuff in our own personal lives that we couldn't explain. And that could be like, for October, we could do like a Halloween episode.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So I think that's a good idea. I think we'll do that for Locker Room.
We'll do that for Locker Room. And then everybody that is just a, you know, a War Stories podcast snob will just have to check out Locker Room for one episode for that.
Yeah. And if you guys have stories that you want us to read on that episode, send them to me, mailbag.warstories@gmail.com, and we can collect some of these like crazy shit that happened to me, you know, what happened was kind of stories. Yeah,
you know, what's funny about that is earlier today on the Locker Room email that I kind of monitor and head up, actually this morning, there was a listener who said, hey, I was just going back and listening, and I listened to the Halloween episode, and here's my supernatural story. So that was today at 10:25 this morning. It's, got that email.
That's pretty cool.
All right. So those are our emails. I've had them. I've been threatening to read them for a couple of weeks, but we just kept getting them pushed. And you can see some of them are a couple weeks old. But so I apologize for not quite getting to all of those as soon as I could. And if I missed your email, please forward it to me again, because there is a backlog sometimes.
Isn't that interesting sorry, I didn't mean to break your momentum, but from the whole get-go of this till now, it's like it's a chore now for me to try to get back to people in a timely manner.
Yeah.
That are between the social media, you know, DMs and the emails. And I'm like, holy shit, this is like, I need a fucking assistant to kind of feel some of this stuff to say, hey, you know, that this is, you know, forward stuff with me to me with a little fire emoji in the subject line if I need to get back to this person right away. And it's, you know, and I feel bad, but it's like, you know, we're all working, you know, 10 plus hours a day anyway. And then trying to,
if we were making enough money where one of us could quit our jobs and actually like do this full time, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
But,
or hire somebody.
Chuck do it because he's home right now.
Hey, I've been on the ball with this shit.
I know you've been on more stories.
I've even sat down on the phone with some people who have DM'd me or emailed and stuff like that, getting ready to go to the police academy and asking me, or not the academy, getting ready to go through interviews and stuff like that. And like, do you have any advice or anything like that? And I'm like, call me, let's talk. And I talked with someone for like 45 minutes and then hooked him up with Ken and said, hey, you know, you need to, you know, go talk to this guy. He'll help you out.
Yeah.
But I gave him like 5-6 things that he needs to study, you know, for an oral board, and which will set him above and beyond everybody else. You know, I don't give a shit. Like, hit us up.
Well, we are trying to come up with ways for you guys to support the podcast. We're just talking about this. We're going to do some locker room shirts, and we've got the war story shirts coming up. We're also, if you guys see the FAFO 40mm defensive round patch that we're going to do, Jeff and I are talking about doing that on a shirt. So I thought that might be kind of fun, especially if with winter coming up, we've been talking about doing a long sleeve. So that might be cool if we did like the round down fuck around, find out with the round down the sleeve, and then the big round on the shirt on the front might be kind of,
or like big letters FAFO or fuck around and find out going down the arm.
That'd yes, cool. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we got some of those, but we also want to do, we want to find out if people would rather have like tumblers, like those insulated Yeti, you know, hydro flask, whatever type.
Every time.
Coolers that people can drink from that, you know, keep things cool forever, or if they would rather have like the travel coffee mugs, or if they would rather have like nice actual barware, you know, like the ones that have the bullet pushing through it, or, you know, some of those things. So if there's something that you guys would rather have over the other, we're looking for ways that we can get some merch that will get it made. You guys can rep your favorite podcasts, whether it's Lore Stories or Locker Room, and it'll also help support what we're doing here. So if you guys send us emails or send us DMs about, you know, what your ideas of what you'd rather have between a tumbler or a coffee mug or whatever it is, that would be super helpful. And then you're right, because all this catching up, like we had a listener tag us, she scooped up a Locker Room podcast shirt off of the TeePublic site, and the ones that we're trying to have actually made right now, and then she wore it for 4th of July and tagged us in it, and then her account's private, so I didn't get the tag until much, much later when I saw it through her following my personal account. So I want to say thanks to Kat. We saw your picture for 4th of July rocking the Locker Room shirt, and so that was cool. If we can find ways to support the podcast like that, let us know. We'll be happy to do it. Chuck's working on some new hats as well, and Marco's working on some artwork, supposedly. We'll see. But that's our topic. And one of the reasons we brought Matt on has to do with some personal stuff that we were discussing that we thought might be an interesting topic for the show. And it also kind of ties into Matt because it has to do with criminal backgrounds and people with criminal records.
Right.
For those of you who've listened to this show long enough, they know that Matt and I have known each other forever and a day. And while I went to the police academy, he went to prison. And so,
and hilarity ensued.
Right. It's almost like a sitcom or something.
It really writes itself. Yeah.
But Chuck, you you had an issue that kind of brought all of this to bear, if you kind of want
to explain. Yeah. So this is a personal issue. And the what I'm going to start with first is everybody's entitled to a second chance, but where does that stop?
Oh, okay. I like that. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I thought it was catchy. Anyways, so
he's all proud of himself.
Now there's going to be some things due to confidentiality reasons. I'm not going to list names or anything like that. And I'm not going to really list like the whole deal. I'm just going to give the basic background. So someone in a family decides to kind of already had some issues already, but decides to start dating someone who was convicted of murder. And this is kind of that background. The murder happened. It was a drug dealer. Some guy got pissed off, had some issues, I guess, regarding, you know, abuse as a child, then got involved in drugs, and then decided, I guess the drug dealer was beating up his buddy or roughed him up a couple times. So he decides to get a gun and premeditate a murder. Carries out the murder and murders this guy.
As one does.
Right.
The guy that was getting roughed up decided to go.
No, that his buddy.
His buddy. Gotcha.
A family member decides to start dating this guy after he gets out of prison after being convicted of murder after 20 years. What happened was is that he murdered someone, premeditated the murder, then carried out the murder with a gun, shot him to death. Then conspiracy to commit a second murder, and then actually tries to attempt murder and shoots this guy. The guy ends up living. Long story short, convicted, sent to a prison out here. And then I guess gets out due to Newsom's, you know, release you on good behavior after 20 years. In many other states, that's a death sentence. You're on death row. You're not getting out. And the only way you're going to get out is if you can somehow prove to a parole board that you are an upstanding model citizen. Well, I guess, I don't know. And what I know about criminology and stuff like this as being a police officer, as well as going to college, that people who commit heinous crimes, you know, like murders and things like that, there's something wrong in the brain, unless it's like a crime of passion where your daughter just got, or your young daughter just got molested by your neighbor. You go over there and you cap the guy. That's a different mindset. This mindset to premeditate a murder, carry the murder out, and then go and attempt to murder somebody else, but the guy just doesn't die and you get caught and you go to jail or prison. Now, people like that, in my opinion, will say whatever they can when they get out to say, like, oh, I'm an upstanding model citizen, because they don't want to spend the rest of their life in prison. In my opinion, I don't know. But I have a problem being a police officer associating with this subject and this person. I don't feel comfortable. I do not want to bring my children around this person. I do not want to bring my daughter who's a year and a half around this person. And I'm kind of being pressured by family members. Oh, you should give this guy a second chance. You should go and meet him. You should listen to a podcast he was on that talks about his abuse as a child, which really ultimately led to him murdering and attempt murdering two people. I'm like, I'm good. I don't really care to listen to the podcast that he was on, because I don't necessarily care to listen to lies or someone telling someone to make themselves feel better. I just don't give a shit, nor do I want to associate with that. And as being a current police officer, I don't feel that it's appropriate for me to associate with someone who, one, murdered someone, attempted to murder somebody else, and has been let out. I'm not going to be sitting there rubbing shoulders at family events, Christmases, dinners, things like that. No, absolutely not. And nor do I feel comfortable with my kids around this person or my wife. Now, they're like, well, you just give them a chance. Give them a chance. I'm like, no, to be honest, this is like a hard no for me, because there are two things in this world that it's a hard no. Rape, like raping a child, raping a woman, committing one of those heinous crimes. And two, which is a cardinal sin, which is like the ultimate sin, is taking someone's life. Now, it's different when it's premeditated and it's not out of self-defense and it's not out of crime of passion. This is straight up premeditated. You not only premeditated one, you had in the mindset to kill one person, but you had the mindset to kill another person. It just didn't go your way. Now, am I wrong for feeling like, I don't want to give this guy a second chance. I don't want my children being around this person. I don't even want my wife being around this person, regardless if I'm there or not. I don't want anybody who's in my direct immediate family who lives under my roof being around this person. I don't feel it safe. I don't feel like I really want to be on a A&E special or some sort of true crime documentary or some Lifetime movie documentary. Right, I don't want to be associated with any of that. And I believe people are allowed to have a second chance. I really do. I think there's some people in this world that have turned their fucking lives around. And, you know, there are some people that I'm even friends with who've turned their lives around. And I think it's great. And I commend them. And I think it's fucking amazing. But at the same time, to me, that there's a hard stop when it comes to this. And this is it. And how crazy that, like, a 1 in a million fucking shot, this happens to happen to me. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do it. I refuse. I absolutely refuse. Am I wrong?
The short answer is no. Ultimately, you're not. But okay. I have a couple like follow-up questions. How old is this relationship? Like, how, like, are we talking?
Oh, fuck, bro. I don't know if they were talking while he was in prison, but that's weird. One, yeah. But I don't know. Two, okay. They were dating for, I think, under a year.
Okay.
And then just got married. So how well do you know this person?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't know that. I mean, look, that there's, look, my parents, had my dad lived, when my dad died, they were married longer than they were single, and they knew each other a few months and got married. But that's a rare thing, and that's a generational thing, and that was back in, you know, the day. But yeah, under a year. So the whole relationship as it stands right now is maybe a year old.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
to my knowledge.
Right. And then, now look, I
can at least be only as old as how long he's been out.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
And so that's another thing.
Just pen pals.
Yeah. So now look, I wasn't incarcerated in California. I was in Arizona, and for those who don't know my pedigree of stupidness, I did 2.5 years in prison. In Arizona, it was designated 2 counts of a class 3 dangerous felony, pled it down to 1 count to a class 3 dangerous felony, which in Arizona lingo, transferring to California, was just a notch below attempted murder. So I was looking at 5 to 15 with a presumptive term of 8.5 years. I was in in jail for 6 months, you know, pre-sentenced. And then finally signed a plea deal to go away for 2.5 years, and did day for day on that because I was a little shithead and lost all my good time. So that having been said, I'm not like, you know, I haven't spent a shit ton of time incarcerated, but you know, a prison is a prison is a prison. And I was not rehabilitated. There were no programs for me when I was in there, aside from AANACA. If you want to get a GED, you know, raking rocks in the yard, working in the kitchen, and just working
stamp
out
and license plates,
you know, yeah, there was no, there's no rehabilitation in prisons. So especially for, and I sat at a big boy table. I was in, you know, with lifers and shit. I was, you know, in a medium high facility. So it wasn't like I was in some little fucking white collar place. So I sat at the big kid table. Let's just say that, there's, to the best of my knowledge, the prison system right now, it's not about rehabilitation. It's, you know, they lock you up and that's it. So how did this man who spent 20 years in one of the greatest institutions on how to be a bigger shithead than you already are, because that's all people do in there is talk about the stupid shit they're going to do or they did do and compare notes and, oh, if I would have done it this way, oh, that was a good idea, da 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 da.
It's how, criminal school.
It is. And I mean, how rehabilitated is this person? And then there, you know, I mean, you can throw in the religious aspect, you know, and maybe he found Jesus while he was in there, and you know, there's forgiveness there, and that's all, you know, a personal thing from person to person, and whether you believe in that or not. But my biggest thing is I didn't experience. I was in the 90s. And I'm sure it hasn't gotten any better across the board institution wise since then, but there were no programs for me to become a better person when I was in there. There was educational programs and there was nothing like any sort of therapeutic anything to address, you know, why are you here? Why did you do what you do? Why did you do what you did? And stuff like that. So especially for somebody who did something as heinous as premeditatedly murdered one person and then attempted another one, that's my big question is how rehabilitated are you? Like,
right.
And you've been out for how long? How have you turned your life around?
Right. I think he'd been out for like a year and a half, maybe 2 years. And I guess she met him while he was on the outside. But I'm like, I don't intend to find the fuck out. Like, I don't really give a shit, nor I'm going to, it's not my fault. You decided to marry someone who was convicted of fucking murder and premeditated that shit. And then
especially
attempted
that
to murder
soon.
Somebody else.
And especially that soon. And shame on that guy for like the last thing that I wanted to do when I got out was to involve myself with somebody else's life. Like I had to figure my shit out. Like I was like, okay, this is, I'm out now. I served my time. I need to figure my shit out and get me in a right spot. And the only way to do that is on your own. So it's kind of like a shame on that guy for even like, you know, doing that, but you're not wrong. You're fucking not wrong at all. Not at all.
So that goes back to, I mean, okay. So I've experienced things similar to this, both in my actual life and then through some close friends of my wife's, right? A very close friend of my wife, her best friend married a man who had previously been married. This guy had a daughter with his first wife. They got divorced. Ex-wife meets a boyfriend. Boyfriend ends up beating his daughter to death. Like four years old or 6 years old, right?
Jesus.
Goes to prison. Is, you know, lives in or was from the same area that he was from. And, you know, 25 years later or whatever it is, 20 years later, not even, probably 18 years later, this guy gets paroled, you know, and they were living up in the area where I live now or just south of it. They moved to Florida and he just said, nope, I'm moving to Florida because I don't want to ever have to worry that I'm going to run into that asshole anytime in my life. I do not know what I'll do. I do not know how I'll behave. I don't care what the fucking parole board says. He killed my kid.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to have to see him. So, I mean, does the guy who served 18 years for murdering a four-year-old, whether it was on accident or on purpose or whatever, does he deserve a second chance? Well, my question is, from whom? Right?
Right.
And for why? So Chuck's a cop, you know, Chuck's, you see this shit happen for a living, you know what these people are. It's not a question of, and anybody that tells you differently is selling something. If you spend any time as a cop, or anytime as a firefighter, or anytime as a doctor, or anytime dealing with human misery, you do get a special insight into the human psyche and into the human condition. You can't stare into the black hole for, you know, a job for that many years and not come away changed, right?
Right.
So at some point, you are able to, I think, authoritatively look at someone and go, yeah, no, not, he's a piece of shit. And you guys are more than welcome to welcome him into your home and take the chance on this being a dog that only bit once. But to me, once a biter, always a biter. And I don't want him anywhere near me or my family.
Yeah. And my thing is, I agree. Yes. Everyone deserves a second chance. Cause it was hard for me to get my second chance when I got out and I didn't fucking murder anybody, you know, but it was just hard enough. You have that mark on you. Everybody deserves a second chance. But no one's obligated to give it to you.
Right.
You're not obligated to give this guy a second chance. Sure, he deserves it. Absolutely, he deserves it. And more power on those who are going to give it to him. But you're not obligated.
But you know what? Just to prove my point, when you were going through legal paperwork to get some things dealt with and kind of, you know, returned back to how you were pre-prison.
I was getting my rights restored. I applied. Yeah. I had to wait. 10 years and a day after I got released to apply to get my gun rights restored.
Right. And when you were going through that process, you know, I absolutely said I would 100% write you a letter of recommendation to the judge who was looking at your entire packet, you know, of what a person you've been for the last decade and how, you know, and here I am as a police officer. I'm willing to stake my name and my reputation on that because I know you and I knew what you are and I knew what you were. And I knew, you know, that's different than saying, okay, this guy's a cold-blooded murderer who I've never met, don't have any dealings with whatsoever, no read on him as a person, and you're just expecting me to take it on face value. Oh, well, you know, he killed one person, but he apologized. He's really sorry. He's not going to do it again.
Oh, and check this.
Really?
Yeah. And it was 20 years ago. It was 20 years ago.
What? And check this shit out.
He hasn't killed anybody since. Well, he's been in prison. He couldn't.
Well, right? No, you can.
Well, you can.
Yeah, that's true.
But how many of that stuff gets there's no evidence. You can't, there's really no way to find evidence. So how many of those murders go unsolved and
a lot,
whatever. So he could have been involved in a lot of different shit. And who knows?
Nobody cares.
I don't know. And no one cares. But here's the thing. The dude he attempted to murder actually was in his wedding.
Holy shit. And that's another.
He tried to murder him?
Well, he just got married, right? So it's 20 and 2 years, 21 and a half years, 22 years, I think, that, you know, since he committed the murder.
Okay, police. Now we're just dealing. This is where I'm going back to the old school radio disposition. You know, back in the day, like when I came on the job, you could barely do this, you know, and you certainly can't do it now, but you'd leave a call and you go, yeah, I'm 10-8. You know, negative on a crime, no, NHI, and NHI just meant no humans involved. And that, you know, you can't say that over the radio anymore. But this is clearly a case of no humans involved. This guy tries to kill a dude, successfully kills another dude, first of all, and then tries to kill this other guy. And then 20 years later, that guy's in his wedding party.
Yeah. Come on. So that was one of the excuses given to me. Well, he killed one person and the second guy he attempted to kill ended up being in his wedding. So, you know, that just goes to show you, I'm like, the fucking, that's weird. One, two, yeah. I don't really give a shit. Three, I'm never going to meet this motherfucker. I don't care. And I, you know, I'm getting pulled from all these directions, you know, like, well, the family is not going to be broken up in the holidays. I'm like, that's their fucking fault. That's not mine. I didn't go out to and say, hey, you should marry this guy who fucking murdered a bunch of people or murdered someone and attempted to murder someone else. But I guess has reconciled that with him. I don't really care. I didn't tell you to do this. I didn't put myself in this position. You put me in this position and everybody else needs to see that shit because it's not my fault. I didn't go looking for this drama. I don't, it kind of just fell into my lap and I'm like, I don't care. And I say this too, I'm divorced. I have two children that I pay child support for that I have 50% of the time. What the fuck do you think a judge is going to look if that gets back to a judge?
Oh, yeah, my ex-wife goes into court and says,
what the fuck? Yeah, he's allowing my children to be around someone who's been convicted of murder. And they ask me, well, is that true? Yeah, but I don't like them. It doesn't fucking matter. They can take my fucking kids. I'm sorry. I'm not putting my kids that from a previous marriage that are my wife's stepkids into that spot. Absolutely not. Nor am I putting allowing my wife to be in that spot. And luckily I don't have to because she agrees with me. And I don't, not putting my a year and a half year old into that fucking spot. This guy can fucking snap. If he was driven to murder because of something that happened to him as a child, spark something in his fucking brain. He's like, oh, I'm going to fucking do this. I was abused as a child. I don't give a fuck. What's going to stop you from doing that shit again?
Yeah. How many days a week is he going to therapy now that he's out?
Dude, right. I don't fucking know.
Huh? None. Well, I'll tell you what. It's zero. It's
exactly zero. But that's another piece of the math that enters into it is as police officers, and I'm sure I guarantee you there's at least five or six fire departments. I'm being facetious. There's probably a ton of fire departments that the employees have clauses in their agreements with the city that they're not to associate with known felons, right? And that's
exactly
the actual department policy. So I'll give you a perfect example that changes the math, because one of the cold hard calculations that you can make, Chuck, in my opinion, or any one of you guys listening out there, if you're making, like, if this is you and you're a cop and you're struggling with the fact that your brother-in-law or your cousin or your uncle went to jail or you know got out and you're wondering how to deal with it. This is the simple math for me, and it sounds heartless, but it is. How much are they going to enrich your life? Right? Do they matter, really? Do you ever have to see them again? In Chuck's case, this guy means a squirt of piss as far as you're concerned, and he does not enrich your life or bring anything to the table for you one iota, one scintilla, nothing. There is no reason why you should take any risk for him whatsoever, and you have no reason to actually know him other than your family's asking you to, and that's just not a good enough reason at this point. Whereas in Matt's case, Matt adds a lot to my life. We've been friends for a long time. I know there's much more to him that he adds to my life than he takes from it. So I went to the department and I said, my friend is out of prison. He, you know, is moving back to the da, 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 da. And I made the case and I presented a memo and I got permission to associate with him because I had to notify them if I was going to associate with a known felon. And when they heard all of it, the chief was like, yeah, that sounds fine. It wasn't even a thing. It wasn't even a big deal because Matt had a track record of change and Matt, had, you know,
right. Like, and I didn't kill anybody.
Well, there's that.
That I was convicted of.
But you know what? That's an interesting point too, is Chuck mentions rape and murder. Well, there's a reason why rape and murder are always like the big two. One destroys your life. The other destroys your soul. Right.
Yeah.
And if you come to me, you say, well, he committed a robbery, and I go, okay. And they go, but he had some starving children at home and he's trying to pay for a cancer treatment and da 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 da. And this, or he was raised in a terrible environment. He knew no other way to get the money that, okay. Those are mitigating factors that I can kind of go like, okay, yeah, I get it. I understand. Let's have some mercy on him. I can't think of anything. And I've watched a ton of serial killer documentaries. I've listened to people with the most fucked up childhoods imaginable. And I have yet to find a single instance where I go, you know, with as much shit as that poor kid went through, he's totally justified in raping and beheading that girl. Oh, he's right. Totally justified in murdering that innocent person. It's never happened. Like, no. And that's why there are two crimes that you can't ever like use a legal justification of duress, and that's rape and murder. You can't do those things to people and have, well, I was under a lot of duress at the time, be a defense. It doesn't matter. You just can't.
And here's the thing with that. This guy got convicted, served his time, right? His victim's family is still serving a sentence till their dying day because he murdered somebody. And the rapist, the victim of rape, serves that sentence of being a rape victim till their dying day. So yeah, he served his time and got out. Okay, cool. Where's the guy that he murdered? He's still dead. That
cool
family,
story, bro.
Still mourning for that person, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think this whole thing is like, when I was sitting there thinking about it, I was like, how the fuck is this even a conversation right now? How are you even asking me to do this? And I'm like, that's fine. If you guys are okay with it, I'm fucking not. I can't be okay with it because if I wasn't a cop and I didn't know the psyche of a criminal and I didn't study it in college, I'd probably have a different outlook on it.
Nah, as a Marine, you'd still think it was fucked up.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm saying if I wasn't any of that, like if I was
as a human, I think this just an average human would be like,
you'd be like, wait, he's just a murderer? What? He killed some killed, like
he ran a red light and killed somebody in the car. No.
Oh,
like he was like,
like hiding in a bush, you know?
Yeah.
but even then, I'm not
malice aforethought, you know?
Yeah. I'm not that person. I know criminal psyche. I've studied it. I've dealt with it on a daily fucking basis for about almost 10 years. I'm sorry. Like I'm not going to put my family in that position. I don't feel comfortable with even my wife being there without the kids, without me, because like that's my wife. Like, what if something happened? What if he just fucking snapped? And next thing you know, he fucking murders everybody, or at least tries. And fucking what happens if my wife gets murdered? That's the shit that I think about, because I've seen shit like this go down and I'm not okay with it. And I don't, how dare you for even trying to talk to me about it or getting mad at me because I have a firm fucking stance on this shit, because these are people that I care about. Now, the other people, you guys don't live with me. You're not under my roof. I don't provide for you. I don't support you. You know,
you want to be stupid? Go get your head fucked up by the barber down the street.
But I rely on my wife and my kids, and I love them to death. Now, if something was to happen to them, I'd be fucking heartbroken, and I don't even want to put myself in that position. I don't want to put them in that position. Like, that's not fair.
And there's no reason to.
No, there's not. And I'm never going to meet this dude. I refuse. It's not my fucking fault. Leave me the fuck alone about it.
But, and here's the thing. You got two routes out of it. You can go to him and say, I don't care to meet this dude. I don't want to meet this dude. If it hurts your feelings, I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. You chose this, not me. Or you go the route of, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So I'll just tell him department policy says I can't. Too bad. So sad.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, the department policy thing is 100% true. And like, I don't know, like, how this can, I just don't know how it can be a conversation with me. Like, I'm like, that's not fair. And for people to put it on me, like, oh, well, this is going to break up like family events. I'm like, well, sorry, family events were already broken up before this because there were some other issues. And I was like, that's not my fucking fault. Like, I'm sorry that
there's other issues in this family. If this chick's fucking dating a murderer, she's only known a year.
I don't get it. Just, like, I'm like, that's again, not my fault.
I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but I have been a cop for a really long time.
So, how do you, where like, do you even meet somebody? Like, where does one meet a murderer?
Murdergate.com?
I want to
murdersonly.com.
I want to go back to the whole the guy that he attempted to murder was in his wedding party. Like, how does that introduction sound?
Know,
this is my friend John. How do you guys know each other? I tried to fucking kill him, but the fucker, he fucking survived. Here we are.
He didn't die.
He didn't die. So we're still buds.
He forgave me.
Jesus.
What?
Yeah.
Like, well, I think the whole thing's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you tell him that we said, no, you can't associate with him. Put it on us.
Exactly. I even asked my dad, dad, who I go to for advice still. And I ask him crazy things all the time. And I really cherish his advice because he's the only person I can get advice from because I got a dad and that's it.
Yeah.
And he was like, fuck no, dude. No. And he didn't say dude because he's old.
Right. Right.
But he was like, uh-uh. No, absolutely not. And I'm like, well, that answers my question. I don't need to prod this shit anymore because he's known about this. I've been open with him about this whole thing. And when I got the go ahead to, you know, share my thoughts and feelings regarding this from an unknown person, I'm not going to say, because if someone does listen to it, I don't want that person to get backlash. But, you know, I was like, okay, I'll come on and talk about it. I'll do it anonymously. And that person was like, you know, say that this is involving you. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, like, this isn't okay. I'm never going to be okay with it. And nor will I jeopardize my family for it. And that's not my fault. The other person decided to do this, and that should be put on them. If it breaks up family, you know, get togethers where the whole family can be together for Christmas, Thanksgiving, birthday parties, that should be put on them. Not fucking me. That shit ain't fair. Nor is it cool. Get the hell out of here with that. You should be upset at the other person, not fucking me.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm speaking to the totally wrong audience as listeners of War Stories and Locker Room, but I'd be curious if there's anybody listening that thinks that, you know, you're wrong and maybe you should give this person a chance. And I'm going to go with a chance of that happening is probably somewhere around the 0%.
About the same chance of Chuck actually meeting this dude.
Right.
Well, since we don't have a guest, well, I guess Matt's the guest, but he's more of a, you know, guest host rather than a guest. I thought we would take this opportunity. I don't think either of you two will disagree with me. Let's dedicate this episode to Frank Lorimer, the grandfather of our emailer, Danny.
I
looked him up and it says Frank Lorimer passed away August 25th, 2021. He was the son of Frank D. Sr. and Mildred Lorimer of Morrisville, Pennsylvania. Frank had been active in the Louisville community, having served on the vestry of his church and was the president of the board. He was also president of the Metro Kiwanis Club. He was a Kentucky colonel and served his country in the U.S. Navy after graduating from officer candidate school. He was retired from General Electric and Morgan Stanley, having earned a Bachelor of Science from Rider and a Master's of Business from Bellarmine. So, Frank Lorimer, rest easy, brother. Thank you for your service. We've got it from here. And Danny, thanks for bringing your grandfather to our attention. You know, if only we could have met him, right? Chuck, do you have anything else as we close out, or Matt?
Yeah. If you guys are looking to come on the show, booking.warstories@gmail.com. If you forget that, because I know it's super complicated, you can go to Facebook or Instagram. Click the link in the bio, and it will pop up. Booking email, mailbag email for War Stories. Mm-hmm. It also give you a link to the other social platform that you're not on, like Facebook or Instagram. And it'll give you access to our YouTube channel. Just click the link. It takes you right link there. Tree. Super simple. Kind of like a Linktree. Not Linktree, but it's like the same thing. The fucking same thing.
Except so without the OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
By the way, that was my favorite meme, is the OnlyFeds.
The OnlyFeds was, yes, brilliant.
My favorite Fed meme. Boys.
Yeah. All right. Well, send Locker Room your supernatural work stories. Because let's face it, every cop, every firefighter, everybody in the ER, everybody working an ambulance, every medic, every EMT, you know, when that moon is full, shit's gonna go sideways.
Dude, yeah. I'll bring a photo of a cyclops. Like a legit cyclops.
It's just got weird. Okay.
Dude, you'll be like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to say appreciate you guys, and we hope you had a good episode listening to your emails being read. If you have any more, just send them in to us, and we collect them and then try and do an episode like this every once in a while. It's fun for us, and then we get to talk about a topic. And clearly Chuck's dug in on this one. He was burrowed in. This was a hot issue for him. So,
it's fucking dude, absolutely. I can't.
All right. Well, until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.